This free program is paid for by the listeners of WBAI New York. If you're not already a member, think about joining us to help keep free speech alive.
Moorish. Orthodox. Radio. Crusade. Anarchism for the global city. Radical environmentalism for the concrete jungle. Esoteric explorations of the secret history of rebel culture. The Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade. Every Tuesday at midnight after the news, only on listener-supported, non-commercial WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. Be there.
Hey, nothing but a credit. gonna knock them boots. Huh. Yeah.
Thank you.
right, welcome aboard to the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade here on listener-supported, non-commercial WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. And joining us tonight to talk about New York City, as a matter of fact, are a couple of guests. Welcome aboard, Mark Reed and Jeffrey Croft, respectively, of The Save Union Square, or the, what is it, the Union Square Citizens Improvement District, or something like
That's
that?
That's the Union Square Community Improvement District.
Community Improvement District, a rather tongue-in-cheek, pseudo-bureaucratic name.
Yes.
And Jeffrey Croft of New York City Park Advocates.
Yes.
Right.
Good evening.
Welcome aboard, guys.
Thanks.
Well, I should first identify the music that we opened up with, which we're continuing with our explorations into third world psychedelia. This is from the World Psychedelic Music Series of from Normal Records in Bonn, Germany, which has reissued little-known stuff from garage bands and acid rock bands from the third world from back in the 1960s. And that first one that we heard was from a guy by the name of Musa Dumbia from the Ivory Coast. Definitely riffing off of the James Brown tip there. And the second one we heard was from their Mexico series. That was a group called La Vida, singing in heavily accented English a song called Touch Me, or Touch Me. Once again, did either of you guys recognize the riff, which they, from a very well-known Los Angeles band of that era, which they had sort of appropriated?
Absolutely not.
No, absolutely not. Totally did not.
La De Vida, right?
Exactly!
Yeah. In a God of De Vida, that's what they were doing?
You got it.
All right,
okay. Mark, probably.
And interesting, that must have been a very influential song, because last week we played something from the Cuban group Los Van Van, which had also appropriated the same bass line. So there you go. And all these, you know, classic rock stations will occasionally blow the dust off of In a God of De Vida by Iron Butterfly and give it a spin. They should be delving into this stuff, which is actually far more interesting and lively, I would argue. And more importantly, you know, we haven't like heard it all a million times before, right? It's something fresh and new, even if it's dated to the same era as the Iron Butterfly classic. Anyway, we'll be delving more into this collection later on this evening, but you guys held a protest this past week at Union Square Park, correct?
Indeed, we had a push back picnic, you know, coinciding with that, you know, the 232nd birthday of the United States of America, of course, which was a couple days later. But yeah, we had a push back picnic. We had some watermelon. We had, you know, find the privatizer games. Various other silliness, and then we actually went over to Union Square Cafe, which is owned by Danny Meyer, who's the chair of the BID,
the Business Improvement District.
Yes. We're the Community Improvement District. They are the Business Improvement District.
Right, right, right.
Get it?
Satire.
Right, indeed. So he owns Union Square Cafe, so we went over there and we brought the park to the Union Square Cafe, meaning we brought trees and sod and attempted to bring it into the restaurant to, you know, the park pushing back against the privatizers. Mm-hmm. Push back against the privatizers.
So you were actually carrying trees and sod?
We were carrying small trees and sod. Yes,
Where'd you get the small trees and sod?
Home Depot. Despot. Home Despot. Yes. That's where we got that.
And, okay, now, where is the Union Square Cafe? Is that the one which is...
It's on 16th Street.
Right.
West of the park.
Okay, and is that the establishment which is hoping to establish itself actually within the park?
No, that remains the great mystery.
Oh, okay.
What will actually... Who the proprietor would be and what the restaurant's name, and none of that information is clear. This would be inside the pavilion, the historic
right.
building on the north end there, from
which is what we're going to talk
about.
Our
great
tonight.
Anarchist, you know, forebears spoke from there and gathered there and organized from there, as you well know.
Yes.
It's got a long history.
All right, so which we will get into tonight. But meanwhile, if it's not clear exactly who the privatizer is, which is why you were playing.
No, it's clear who the privatizers are. It's just not clear who's going to run the restaurant inside the pavilion. Who's going to get the cherry?
Okay,
they haven't revealed that information.
All right, so who are the the privatizers? Of course, would be the city of New York.
Sure, Bloomberg. Right. Bloomberg. I think that this rests at the foot of the mayor more.
But
than
the privatizee is still unclear.
And the privatizee would be us, the public, or the park would be the privatizee, I think, in this case.
Right, okay. Well, we're getting our terminology a little bit.
Okay. The privatizers are the Business Improvement District. They're the folks as Whole Foods and Barnes & Noble and Danny Meyer and, a bunch of, a lot of corporate chains and big business interests who are calling the shots, who have shoved this plan down the throats of the citizenry, is what I would say. Jeffrey might have a more subtle read on how exactly they did that.
But not that much subtle. Yeah, we've been involved for over 4 years, and it's pretty amazing. The public really has no say in their public spaces, and why is a private donor, who's now the donation is up to $7 million. Anonymous donor. How is an anonymous donor able to dictate land uses on what are supposed to be public lands? And that's unfortunately one of the big battles that we're fighting down there.
All right. Well, I've got numerous questions. For starters, your protest, if it's unclear what the role is of the Union Square Cafe, why did the protest target the Union Square Cafe?
I don't think it's unclear. Danny Meyer is the chair of the Business Improvement District. And this, Jeffrey can speak to it a little more clearly, but it's really Danny Meyer's plan. He's the one he's the architect behind this plan, more than any other single individual. And he's got other restaurants and other parks. The Shake Shack. Actually, that's not a bad. See, some things aren't so bad. The Shake Shack isn't so horrible.
Where is the Shake Shack?
It's in Madison Square Park.
Yes.
Is that right? Madison Square Park. Mm. And things like Snack Shacks or even a Shake Shack, where you can go up. I don't mind the idea of being able to get a lemonade in the park or what have you. That doesn't seem to me to be a bad thing. But when they start saying you can't sit here unless you're a paying customer, and it's a public park or a public building, public building in a public park, that's just, out of bounds to my way of thinking.
All right. So he owns the
Danny Meyer owns Union Square Cafe, owns Gramercy Tavern, and so we're targeting his restaurants very specifically and him individually because he's sort of sold himself as nice guy, Mr. New York nice guy. He's the most successful restaurateur in America, and he's also, just wins all of these.
Wait a minute. He's the most successful restaurateur in America?
Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah?
Numero uno.
In terms of what?
In terms of money made, as far as I can tell.
Oh? Well, how many restaurants does he own, apart from the Union Square Cafe, which certainly is not one of the greatest restaurants in America?
Actually, it is. Union Square and Gramercy Tavern are voted, I think, 1 and 2 every year on the on that lovely Zagat's guy. He owns, last time I checked, I think he's up to 12 restaurants, and they're being marketed in Japan, and they're being franchised. Yeah, he's a very successful person.
Okay, so he is sort of the public face or mastermind of this plan for Union Square, but it's not clear that he's actually the one who is going to appropriate the pavilion space for a private establishment.
Well, actually, yeah, in a sworn deposition in the court case, he actually said that he will not be bidding on that. But, there are other board members on the Business Improvement District. Actually, the person who owns the coffee shop is another one who's, these guys are very interested in getting the space there. And unfortunately, at least for the public, the more the public came out against this, the more the city dug in its heels. The space itself has been used for a children's pavilion for over 100 years. Actually, in the 1880s, it was a child and a women's and children's pavilion. And that pavilion was taken down in 1929 to build the subway. And this pavilion was put in 1931, and it had a music room. And it was used for children's. Actually, it was used for children's programming right up until the early 90s. They had actually playground equipment in the sunken terrace, And I believe the Business Improvement District helped get a restaurant there, which was the Luna Cafe, and that was there up until this last year.
Mm-hmm.
And that space, again, usurped public playground space. And it's very, very, very important to understand the kind of the context in which all this is going on. That Community Board 5, has the least amount of playground space of any community board in New York City. And that area has the highest concentration of restaurants in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
So I've spent over 20,000 hours over the last 4 years trying to get a decent playground space for kids. And now, you know, it's been great. There's been a new movement with people like Mark and Reverend Billy. Who really come out and really galvanized the community, which has been great for us. There's no doubt about it. And it puts a different angle and different spin on it. So we're definitely very appreciative of the work that these guys are doing. And, you know, it's good stuff.
Okay. Now, you use the word privatization.
Mm-hmm.
Well, just playing devil's advocate here, the new plan is actually, it's not going to give any more space to a private establishment than had already been given to the Luna Cafe, which is a private establishment already going back 15 years ago, right?
Not 15, 1994.
94, okay.
And I'm not going to quibble over the details about how much is more space and how much is less space. It was wrong in the first place, as you know, the basic thing. I mean, it was wrong to take away like public space and give it to private hands in 1994. It's still wrong. You know, and the fact is that they traded up. You know, they took the sunken terrace and now they want the building. The indoor grand, you know, building of the pavilion. That's what they want. So
okay. Now, just for people who don't hang out in Union Square a lot, let's give them a sense of the geography here. This is the north end of the park.
Yeah.
And there's kind of like a walkway that goes from east to west through the park where the statue of Abraham Lincoln is.
Yes.
And then immediately to the north of that, there is what you're calling the sunken terrace, which sounds a little bit like an oxymoron because one thinks of a terrace as being something which is a little bit higher,
indeed,
not a little bit
indeed.
Lower.
A patio is really, really what it is. Huh?
And then on the other side of that, still going north, you've got the pavilion, which
building.
Is actually a semi-enclosed structure with
right.
a roof and everything.
Right.
And then continuing north, then you've got a sort of a big slab of asphalt, which goes all the way to 17th Street,
right.
which... heretofore has been where the Union Square Green Market meets, what is it, three times a week?
Yeah, three.
Mm-hmm. But now it's all been closed off as they're waiting for this renovation to get
right.
underway.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, it's been under construction. Just a point of correction. Actually, it's the city's spin, and now one of the local elected officials who's actually said that there's the commercial space is going to take up less, which is actually inaccurate. So.
Oh, yes?
Yes.
All right, so the city is saying that the new commercial space is going to take up less than the Luna Cafe did for the past, 12 years?
Yeah, but what they always forget to include is the outdoor space, not just the indoor space, and the kitchen. I mean, just the kitchen alone is almost 1,900 square feet. The upstairs is about 1,500 square feet. But they always forget the outdoor terrace, which is going to be, you know, a significant part of this restaurant.
All right. So I thought that the so-called sunken terrace was actually going to go back to being playground space.
Yes. No, that is. But there's now we're talking about the northern part. Actually, if you look in the Business Improvement District's maps, it's actually on their website. Actually, it's so weird. I happen to have it right in my hand. It's so bizarre. You're going to see red...
Red like umbrellas.
Umbrellas.
Just like outdoor seating.
Yeah.
Right. In front of the pavilion, you know, just to the north of it.
Hmm.
So that's sort of part of the plan.
To me here. Okay.
So they don't count that. They don't count the kitchen. But again, it's probably more or less an even trade in public space, or, you know, that's being used.
Mm.
More or less.
Mm. Okay, I get it. So in other words, we're taking what's now the sunken terrace where the Luna Cafe has been and turning that back into playground space.
That's correct.
But they're going to appropriate some of that big asphalt area where the Green Market has met up until just a few weeks ago
Interesting.
When they closed it off and turn it into outdoor seating for the new cafe.
Right. There
that's what
go.
It looks like. Right. Yeah, no, that's been planned. And I have to, again, we've been working on this for so long. what's really interesting to me is when you look at this plan now, I mean, really just through sheer, you know, tenacity from the public, not only New York City Park Advocates, but the Union Square Community Coalition and people like Edie Shanker and Carol Greitzer. And many others.
All right. Now, Carol Greitzer was the queen of the Times Square renovation back in, what was it, the 80s, right?
Wow. You're going to stump me on that. And if that's true, then I'll have to call Carol to apologize. Oh, Carol was the she's a local city council person who represented the West Village and the Union Square area for, I guess, 21 years, up until, I believe, 1991.
All right. I could be getting my names confused.
Yeah, if you are, then that would be good, because Carol's never told that. But she's really a pioneer. She was wonderful in the 60s. Mm-hmm. I'd like to joke that I wasn't even born when she was advocating for parks and playgrounds. But and Edie Shanker, of course, the widow of Albert Shanker, the very well-known
school union
boss, yeah. Absolutely. And he is one of the many people who spoke at the pavilion. So it means, you know, the pavilion itself means many things to many people, which is nice, that elicits that kind of a reaction. We certainly want it restored and used for other community purposes. And there's no end to, I mean, it's amazing. You look at a summer night, there should be movies there. There should be bands there. There should be, you know, because they are spending this time and money on renovating the North End. And so you're putting trees there. You're actually making it more into.
Yeah, some of the renovation is good renovation, yeah. No doubt. I mean, they're going to put a row of trees along the very north end so that doesn't, you know, the asphalt doesn't run into this, just kind of flow into the streetscape at this point, which that'll be good. There'll be some kind of barrier, a green barrier that'll sort of set off that north end, which is just going to be great, you know, fantastic. You know, but then once you've set it off and sort of could have enclosed it into the park, then how wonderful would it be to have, you know, like some music playing from under the arches of that pavilion, which is acoustically built to carry sound. I mean, it's built for speakers.
When was it built?
It was originally.
That particular building was built in 1931. Mm-hmm. And it's a Palatian style. It's a really gorgeous building.
And there were public events which were held there and so on back?
Oh, yes.
Like what, the 30s through maybe the 70s?
Or much later than that. And it's interesting, even this day, Union Square Park is the most permitted per square foot, the most permitted park for special events.
But I can't remember any events being held in that pavilion.
Well, it's always a backdrop. Mm-hmm. I mean, the pavilion's been used, again, they used to erect a stage in front of it. Mm-hmm. So it was always a backdrop.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You even like WPA photographs.
Right, that's true. Mm-hmm.
And the Photo League. There's a wonderful book on the Photo League. And actually, the cover is this great shot of this fedora hat and the pavilion in the background. But, you know, going back a couple of years, when we originally got started, when we got involved with this, they were only going to increase the playground by 28% in the park. And again, it was so, you know, you can even go to Michael von Volgenberg's website and you can see the original plan or schematics from it. And it's crazy. They wanted to put a bridge from Lincoln statue over into the, open to the pavilion, and they were going to build the majority of that sunken terrace was actually going to be another terrace, an outdoor terrace. So again, the whole reason why this project was getting going was because we got an allocation from the city council of $1.9 million just to build the playground. So the business improvement district, you know, has held this project hostage for all of these years. And it's outrageous. And unfortunately, you know, with this administration, so many of our park projects are just, you know, being just massacred. And we need our elected officials to start sticking up for our public spaces because they mean so many things to so many people. And I know myself, these are our backyards.
All right. So what other examples of public spaces are under attack under the current administration?
No, I just made that up. No. Yankee Stadium. I mean, a perfect example. The poorest congressional district in the United States. We just put out a report on the the parkland scheme. They're not even replacing almost 4 acres of parkland there. And this is, again, historic parkland named after John Mullally, who basically is responsible for 80% of the parkland in the Bronx. He was born in Belfast and just a wonderful human being who realized that as Manhattan grew and as the Bronx grew, that you're going to need public spaces and open spaces. So Yankee Stadium, again, in 8 days, they alienated that park land and gave it to the wealthiest sports franchise in the United States. That is a big one. Randall's Island is another deal that we're fighting.
I want to give that to, like, expensive private schools, basically, and give them, you know, primary. I mean, what exactly are they doing?
Well,
I mean,
it's the largest park reconstruction job in possibly the city's history. Right now, just this part is 170 acres of parkland. And they try to do this behind closed door deal and give the public schools access from 3 to 6 o'clock, which are prime school hours, for a donation. There were, you know, I think it's what, $46 million over, you know.
You mean private schools?
Yeah, private schools. They were going to give the private schools
Dalton
access.
And, like, you know, Trinity and, like, all the wealthy.
For sports events?
For whatever, 3 to 6 p.m.
To
at sports.
For use of these fields.
And what about public schools?
What about them? No one cares about them. No one cares about, you know,
all right, so they're not going to have
schools.
Access?
No. This would be exclusive to these schools who would, for a $46 million donation.
Okay, and what about
exclusive
the.
Exclusive access.
What about the public, generally?
The public would. Again, this is why we are in court over this issue, which a judge this year, just a few months ago, annulled the contract. So this is a huge deal, and not a single public.
Right, a judge annulled the contract.
Yes.
Right, so this is good.
This is very good, except that the judge did not cancel the construction. So this community, Randall's Island, for those who do not know, is located between East Harlem, and the South Bronx. So again, we're talking, you know, people of color, we're talking about poor people, and we're talking about rich, for the most part, Caucasian people coming in to use and being able to buy public land for a donation. So, but unfortunately, the judge did not annul she didn't stop the construction. So now what do we do? I mean, the public did not have a say over whether they wanted, you know, lawns out there, whether they wanted barbecue, whether they wanted, you know, whatever. So now we're stuck with this thing. And they're putting synthetic turf. I don't know if you saw the Daily News article on Sunday. And, you know, this stuff is...
Where are they putting in the synthetic turf?
They're putting it all over. There's it's over 1 million square feet. It's going to be the largest concentration in New York City of synthetic turf. We just took surface temperature readings actually today and last week. These things are hitting, you know, 160 degrees.
All right, now when you say the largest concentration, you mean the New York City is going to have the largest concentration?
Well, New York City already has it. Just the Parks Department alone has, I believe we're hitting our 100th field just in the parks system, not including schools. Randall's Island has, I believe, 7 or 8 fields coming on.
All right, so Randall's Island is going to have the largest concentration in the city.
Yeah.
Right.
In
okay.
one area. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, I just heard that, Columbus Park, the one down in Chinatown, that they put in this pseudo turf down there. And yes, I went down to check it out. Mm-hmm. You know, I hang out in that park a lot, actually, because I like to eat in the noodle shops around there. And I had never noticed that this was not real grass. From a distance, it looks like real grass. You go up and actually closely examine it, and it's actually sunk into soil. Into real soil, but it's not real grass. I'm not even, so it's actually got some kind of, like, bogus root structure. I don't know what keeps it down. It's very insidious because it so closely resembles grass, and yet when you touch it, it doesn't feel anything like grass.
Well, that soil that you're referring to is actually made of cadmium, lead, arsenic. It's made of, that's recycled tires.
Okay, so it's pseudo soil.
Oh, it's not soil. It's a toxic cocktail. It's the city has never done a single test on the stuff. It's releasing VOCs and PAHs. I mean,
what's the alphabet nasty soup? What's a VOC? What's a PAH?
Volatile organic compounds, and PAHs are polycyclic hydrocarbons.
All right, sounds bad.
It's all bad stuff. I'll get killed on this one tomorrow. I'm also tired. It's just bad stuff. I mean, it's basically if you see it and you can smell it. I'm sure when you went down to Columbus Park, you can smell the rubber. And by the way, actually, I'm glad you brought up Columbus Park because that, of course, brings us back to Union Square Park.
Yeah.
That pavilion was abandoned. That pavilion was built late 1900s, and that was abandoned. And just like Union Square was, that was abandoned in the 70s. And the community wanted that to be used as a community center. And fortunately for that community in Chinatown, there wasn't a business improvement district trying to take that away. So if you go there tomorrow, you'll see wonderful community space, ping pong and, people playing games inside, and that was used as a recreation center, just like the one in Union Square was. So, again, that's what the community wants. The community wants this pavilion restored, and they want it to, return to community uses, and especially today, which is so sad. That area around Union Square has changed so much. I'm sure Mark could tell you stories. When I was a kid, I was afraid, you actually stayed away from Union Square Park unless you were in the drug trade.
Oh, absolutely.
In the drug trade.
Right. You did not enter that park in the 1970s unless you were either buying or selling drugs.
Exactly.
And it's like if you tried to even walk through the park and we're not there to buy drugs, you would be like, they'd be like, what are you doing here if you're not here to buy drugs? Get lost,
Get out of here, yeah.
So, but this is typically how the game is played, where the the powers that be allow things to deteriorate to the point where they're dysfunctional through neglect and withholding funds, and then they say, oh well, you see, things aren't working, so we have to privatize everything, and the whole public system inherently doesn't work, so we have to turn everything over to private capital interest.
Yeah.
So, that's exactly what...
That's exactly what's going on.
I mean, yeah. Union Square had to change, obviously.
Yeah.
But but look, if we can just go back to the... briefly, because I was totally, totally outraged when I heard about this. If we just go briefly back to the pseudo-turf issue.
this is really pissing you. Oh, sorry.
It is.
Really upsetting you.
It's very much upsetting him. I understand that the official guidelines for, kids who are playing baseball or whatever on the pseudo turf is that as soon as they get home, they should take off their the clothes they were playing in and turn them inside out. So there's an implicit acknowledgement here that they've been exposed to bad stuff, to toxic stuff.
Yeah.
So and as you say, it's the heat index over these fields on a hot day can go up to 140 degrees or something like that. Why is this even an issue? Why is this even being considered? It's just so deeply and so obviously not right. How have things gotten to this point?
Why and how? I don't think anyone in this room really can answer those questions. Jeffrey, do you have a social theory? Do you have a social theory?
No, it's actually based on your lead-in, which was a great lead-in, which is the money. New York City has 614 natural turf ball fields and doesn't have a single dedicated maintenance worker for 614 ball fields. By comparison, Central Park has 26 ball fields, and they have 26 dedicated maintenance workers, not counting the zone gardeners and ground technicians. So that's actually the reason why we're in this position. New York City has dumped over 40 million pounds of this recycled tires, and really only through advocacy has that changed. Tomorrow in tomorrow's Metro newspaper, you will read another piece about, from Patrick Garden, about the artificial turf. And in this last Sunday's Daily News, we went on a tour of all five of the boroughs, and New York City Park Advocates took temperature readings. And it's pretty dangerous stuff. It's outrageous that the city never bothered to do a single test, not to test any of the chemicals.
Right. You're saying that they're doing this because it's like fields on the cheap. It's like they're basically able to continue to underfund parks if they invest, like it's cheaper to do AstroTurf. I mean, that's
well, actually, it's, in the long run, that's what's actually crazy about this. And again, we just had
because the lawsuits will probably bankrupt.
Well, it's not just the lawsuits, but the actual installation costs. I mean, it costs so much more to put this stuff down. But really, the key there is that New York City, the elected officials refused to fund city parks. We just got a $15 million cut in city parks for this year. Our parks routinely receive about a third in expense dollars what they need. So what they're able to do is, it's a common thing. This happened to us in the 70s, and it's actually almost the reason why we went bankrupt. We're able to get capital funds for things. And sorry to bore everyone with this stuff, but we're able to get capital funds for projects, but what we're not able to get expense dollars. But capital funds we borrow money for. So that means our grandkids are paying for this stuff. So instead of allocating funds for someone to actually take care of a field, we're borrowing the money, laying this junk down, and then, you know, we wash our hands of it. And it's pretty crazy stuff. I mean, I've looked at about almost 80 of these contracts. And just to give you, an example, sod is coming in at like 67 cents a square foot. And we've looked at contracts as high as $10.50 for the artificial turf. But again, we can't, unless the public comes out, and that's, what we need. We need the public to start saying enough is enough. We want grass. Grass has so many qualities. I mean, it actually produces oxygen. It lowers the temperature, and that's one of the, again, back to Yankee Stadium for a second, that was one of the, they're putting artificial parks on top of parking garages. I mean, in the asthma capital of the United States. So, had I known you were interested, I would have brought down tons of samples for you, artificial turf samples for you. They're pretty nasty.
But, I mean, especially kids are going to be playing ball sports on this. You know, if you're sliding into first base and, you're actually going to be ripping off a little bit of your skin and this stuff is going to be getting into contact with your bloodstream. I mean, why is there not a huge outrage over this?
Well, we're trying. I mean, we're trying. We have, this guy, Dr. Bill Crane, he's been on this case for a couple of years. And, Betsy Gottbaum has recently, come on board to start. And we actually just introduced a bill, Letitia James, and a few other city council. We put a bill about a month and a half ago. And, hopefully we want to get some movement on that. And that's basically calls for us ripping out all this infill, that stuff that you call, the rubber infill. We hope to remove that from our parks because that stuff is not good, and replace it with, we're even looking at soil. And also to do a 6-month moratorium on it because the stuff is not good. I mean, clearly it's not good. And now recently, just really in the last couple of days, the city is kind of backing away from this recycled tires. If you go to the Parks Department's website and you look, I mean, Adrian Benepe, unfortunately, he's really the architect of this. He talks about the benefits of using recycled tires of all things to put
the Parks Commissioner.
Yes,
the Parks Commissioner. What benefits are being touted here? Please, pitch me.
Because what else are we going to do with all those tires, man? What are we going to do? Like burn them?
It's so bizarre. I mean, not this
reduce, reuse, recycle, Bill.
It
reduce,
make
reuse, recycle.
Any
reuse.
Sense. Yeah. None of the story makes sense.
Very environmental.
Oh, well, let me ask you, is there any of this stuff in Central Park?
There's actually three fields. They're actually not used as fields, though, and which is actually even more bizarre.
What are they used for?
They're actually used basically for sitting areas, and they're in Heckscher Playground. So what's really bizarre, and we took some samples, we've had them tested, and we haven't released the data yet, but some very interesting stuff has come up in that. But when you go over there to Heckscher Playground, you actually see babies crawling around on this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, it's unbelievable because babies, of course, put things in their mouths.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so none of this makes sense, and it's like a fad. But, you know, even when I'm reluctant to use the word fad because when I think of the word fad, I think, oh, well, you know, Pop Rocks or something. I think of, Rubik's Cube or something. But this is like dangerous stuff. And, you know, it's just, it's crazy. And of course, this administration can't come out and say it. You know, they just can't say, yes, we've made a mistake. It's, you know, the emperor's new clothes over and every single day with this administration. And it's sad because, you know, this is about public health and about public safety.
Okay, but you think that, there in fact has been an implicit acknowledgement that they made a mistake with this? I mean, you're actually seeing signs of a retreat?
We just, because of our advocacy, literally, in the last couple of weeks, they started putting up signs. I just saw them signs. Actually, again, in tomorrow's Metro, you'll see it. They just started putting up signs saying, that these fields in the sun get very hot. And there's a line in there about, you know, if our systems persist, you know, vomiting and headaches and dizziness, that you should go into shade, right? Go into shade. Now, of course, these fields are all in the middle of, you know, there's no shade, right? And to sit down, and if they persist, go see a doctor. So, I mean, literally, we are putting down a product that the city is saying, you know, if these, you know, systems persist, go see a doctor. But yeah, you can get burned on these heat stroke. Which
all right, but this still is not an acknowledgement of error. This is just like okay, you know, we've just like lowered our expectations about quality of life in New York City, and we just got to live with it. And, you know,
I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, yes, I would love to eat my words, but unfortunately, the city really just doesn't understand these health implications. They don't want to because it really is about saving face. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, I keep hearing this over and over. I mean, Venipi's biggest legacy will be that he was the plastic parks commissioner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I keep hearing that over and over again. And you know, it's, you know, they try to save face, and but now they need an exit strategy. And it's pretty wild. But unfortunately, again, the elected officials, and I can talk all I want and other people, but the elected officials need to step up to the plate and say, you know, they need to stop funding this because guess what? We just found out that we have 100 fields and there are another 64 of these going in.
Around the city.
Yeah, and these are just Parks Department. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's really crazy.
All right. Well, you say that they need an exit strategy, which once again sort of assumes that, in fact, they, meaning the administration, is sort of perceived that they have to retreat on this. But then you say that they're actually putting in scores more of these pseudo-turf fields. And it's not AstroTurf, right? This is like worse stuff than AstroTurf.
Yeah, it's actually different types of injuries. We got some internal documents in the last couple months, and we released them. And they basically said that they were moving away from the rubber infill, which is the stuff that you were talking about in Columbus Park.
Mm-hmm.
So we released the document, and we had a press conference. And then within hours, they said that they had made a mistake. And they said, oh, well, you know, we are in fact exploring other, other options, but we're not. We are still sticking with the infill. So again, it's so hard to keep. You really need a scoreboard here, you know, a scorekeeper to keep score. But as of today, the Parks Department is saying that they are backing away from the infill, the rubber infill made of tires, and they're going to go with a carpet style and explore other infill.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a step in the right direction. But again, even the grass, so-called grass that
the pseudo grass
is a petroleum based product,
right? And so I would argue that it's not a step in the right direction because it's just making the whole thing more acceptable and getting us used to the idea that, like, you know, we're not going to have grass in our ball fields anymore.
Rather than addressing the question of like hiring people to take care of fields, like actually having money,
which brings
budget.
Us back again to the whole question of money. Now, you say that the city has got to stop funding this, but increasingly, I mean, the problem here is that, okay, Central Park is a well-funded park. Lots of other parks in the city are not. And the problem is that increasingly, funding for parks is being devolved to the private sector.
Yes.
Yeah. And, you know, the parks which have got a lot of businesses which are willing to invest, like in, you know, the Central Park Conservancy or whatnot, get money. And those which, you know, are in neighborhoods where there aren't a lot of big, sexy private businesses willing to invest don't get funded. Am I correct?
Well, that's our biggest, I mean, that's what New York City Park, I mean, that's what we do the majority of. We spend time and a lot of energy, you know, coming up with those figures. I mean, for instance, Central Park has a $27 million operating budget. And
where does it come from?
It comes from the wealthiest people per capita in the world, which is the residents of Central Park. So Central Park has an operating budget of $27 million. That's not, you know, including capital, but the Bronx, you know, they're, for the entire borough, is getting like $19 million. So, I mean, yeah, there's such a discrepancy. I don't know if you saw, we had this two-page series in the Post on Sunday and Monday, but we talked, you know.
The New York Post.
Yeah, the New York Post on Sunday, Monday, which has, you know, gotten a lot of attention because, again, this was an eight-month investigation, and we go into an incredible disparity. I mean, we don't make any... We're not shy about saying this is a civil rights issue, and you know, wealthy parks, I mean, wealthy neighborhoods are getting this, but ultimately, according to our city charter, which is our local laws, the government is supposed to be paying for these services, and it's not getting done. New York City, the Parks Department, just the Parks Department, is responsible for 14% of the city's land. And for decades, more than two decades, they've received less than 0.5% in city allocated funds.
Okay. Now, when you say that, you know, the wealthiest people in America who live around Central Park are paying for the upkeep of Central Park, I mean, increasingly, that's not through the city budget, but through the Central Park Conservancy.
Right.
So how does that work? How is the Conservancy actually funded?
Well, they have a ton of fundraisers. They have many committees. About a year and a half ago, because they renegotiated their concession deal, they're getting more and more money from concessions. But they get money through donations. I mean, and they have a management contract. This is the second management contract that the city has, and I believe Prospect Park is trying to currently negotiating one as we speak. But they actually manage Central Park.
Right. So, what percentage of Central Park's budget comes from the Conservancy as opposed to the Parks Department?
85%.
85%.
85% of the operating budget for Central Park comes from private donations. Mm-hmm. So 15%.
And now they're going to manage the park.
So, but that actually brings back, you know, not to keep going back to, because you're talking about my favorite subject here, so I really appreciate it. But, I mean, again, that's one of the reasons why we're dealing with Union Square, because, again, these parks are so underfunded, and they come in, you know, they are purported to be these white knights coming in. Oh, look, we're the business improvement district. We're going to put in money for this park. But, again, how does the public have any say what goes on there? And for the most part, you know, Central Park does a really good job, and you know, people respect them for that. But these things, these kind of, you know, these bids and these conservancies, you know, there's no accountability, and that's not good.
All right, so a couple of questions. First of all, you mentioned Prospect Park. Is there a similar plan in the works for? I mean, is there a Prospect Park Conservancy?
There's actually a Prospect Park Alliance, and my sources say that they're currently negotiating a management deal. A lot of these parks don't actually have management deals. They do have MOUs, Memorandum of Understanding.
Okay, but now the Conservancy is getting a management deal for Central Park.
They actually have one. They had one for eight years, and now we're in the second contract for 8 years. Yeah, so this is the second time. And again, it was touted, you know, when it was signed, and, you know, this revolutionary thing, and, you know, and if all you have to do is Google, you know, obviously people who grew up, I mean, those of us who grew up in Central Park, we knew that it was a disaster. And if you go to our website, nycparkadvocates.org, we have a report called The State of the Parks Address, and we actually go into this stuff, and really we follow basically the day Robert Moses leaves office. And when he leaves office,
Which was when?
Which was May of 1960. Mm-hmm. When he leaves office, basically.
As Parks Commissioner.
As Parks Commissioner. Mm-hmm. And as Commissioner for, like, you know, 40,000 other agencies.
Right.
But when he officially steps down as Parks Commissioner, the city allocated 1.4% of its city funds towards parks. And so just if you took that, if you just followed the decrease, that's over a $10 billion decrease. So when he leaves office, you know, again, 1.4% is being allocated. But, you know, a very mismanaged parks system, you know, management, no accountability. And, you know, that's the one thing that the Center for Park Conservancy has done well, which is bring a management and accountability. To that park, and I just totally forgot your question.
But they're not accountable to a public, though. They're accountable in the sort of like sense of corporate efficiency that they make their employees accountable to the higher ups in the chain, and they create a more efficient sort of management structure. As you know, it's run more like a for-profit business than it is like a city agency. But you know, those people, the Conservancy, they're not accountable to any sort of a voting public.
But parks in general aren't. But, you know, just as an aside, you know, the Center Park Conservancy is now going through their growing pains with the union, because there are workers there that want to unionize. So that's getting some attention now, too.
All right, now these workers are in the employ of the Parks Department.
No.
That's what a management contract is.
No, I mean, that's the issue here, is that, again, like Mark was just saying.
They're in the employ of the Conservancy.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, and they're still, I think they're down, I believe, to 25 city employees full-time.
In the park, in Central Park.
In Central Park. Mm-hmm. So I believe, if I got my numbers correct, there are 320 Central Park Conservancy employees. And they have an endowment. I think their endowment is $190 million.
Or now, how long has this been in place? When did the Conservancy come into existence?
It officially came into existence in 1979. Their incorporation papers were in 1979, but everyone says 1980. So for argument's sake, 1980. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that park was in terrible shape. Crime was rampant. I know as a kid, I used to sleep over there sometimes on a Friday night, and it was interesting. But yeah, I mean,
you slept in.
When I was a kid, yeah.
In the 70s.
Yeah, in the 70s. Yeah. Mm-hmm. My hair looked like an afro. I had, you know, not. But it was interesting stuff.
I stayed up all night in, not sleeping, but stayed up all night in Central Park a couple of times in the 80s.
In the 80s, yeah. We actually, I remember the Guardian, they were called the Guardian Angels, and, Curtis, no, they were called the Magnificent Seven.
Oh, yeah.
Curtis Sliwa and stuff. Mm. I remember those guys practicing.
He was the Angels. Was the Magnificent Seven?
Yeah, but I think, if I'm totally wrong, Curtis.
Sidekick?
Yeah, but I think they were originally called the Magnificent Seven or something. And then they,
and there were more than seven, and they became the Guardian Angels.
But I remember them practicing up there. But Central Park was a disaster, and what I was saying in our State of the Parks address, and I got, I guess, sidetracked, but that's on our website. We kind of walk you through all this stuff and what's happening and some of the cause and effect, You know, we say if a city can abandon one of the world's most famous public spaces, just abandon it and walk away from it. Imagine what the other 1,699 parks in New York City. I mean, imagine what they would be getting.
Right. Well, I mean, they've walked away Central Park, but they've left it in quote unquote responsible hands, and it's a much nicer place today than it was 25 years ago, and blah blah blah. Whereas in many communities, parks have been more literally abandoned.
Well, no, but Central Park, now you're actually jumping way ahead, because you had asked how that got started.
Yeah.
I mean, really, it was actually a few kind of friends of groups and conservancies coming together. I think there were three groups at the time that came together to form that. Mm-hmm. But they've spent over $350 million in the last 25 years. renovating one park. I mean, it's just, I mean, that's the amount of money. Parks are a very important part of, you know, we like to think they service from, you know, literally almost the day you're born to the day you die. Your first interactions with strangers or in a playground, you know, your cousins or whatever, these are strangers. You know, a mommy or a daddy brings their child to a playground. And this is the first interaction, social interaction. So these spaces are very important. Unfortunately, people just think of them as there. They don't think how they get maintained. They don't think how they get policed. And they serve many functions. And, yeah, it's very important stuff. So, you know, on this little micro level that we're dealing in Union Square Park, this stuff is happening all over. And, yes, you know, Central Park takes, you know, less than 2% of the city's park land. But, you know, they get a majority of the funds, you know, private funds. So the answer is never going to be private funds. You know, I think it's fine if they supplement, you know, government funds. But what's happening now is they're usurping them. And that's not a good thing.
All right. I should say that it is 1 o'clock in the morning on listener-supported, non-commercial, WBAI 99.5 FM here in New York City, and this is the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade, and my name is Bill Weinberg, and we are speaking with Mark Reed of the Union Square Community Improvement District, and Jeffrey Croft of, what's the name of your group again, Jeffrey?
I forget. NYC Park Advocates.
NYC Park Advocates. Mm-hmm. And how long has that been around?
That has been around, I believe, since 2003, and then I've been doing the advocacy for 12 years, park advocacy and open space.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And how long is the somewhat ironically named, tongue-in-cheek named Union Square Community Improvement District been around? That's
about a month.
About a month.
It's a start. Yeah, it's a
start.
We figure, actually, you know, it's funny, the whole Community Improvement District meme has sort of like taken hold of it. Now there's a Washington Square Community Improvement District.
Oh, indeed. Uh-huh.
And then there's a Bowery Community Improvement District. And
the whole idea
to grow
is
them.
Grow them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, because you know, yes, the business improvement district will definitely improve things for business. Mm-hmm. They'll definitely do that. That's what they want to do in Union Square Park. But you know, maybe community improvement districts can actually seek to change the direction of the conversation, or you know, create a sort of contrapuntal kind of organization
Right. My only fear is that, you know, the humor is going to be lost on some people, and they're
going to
think it actually is.
Yeah,
some kind
this is why what we
sterile bureaucratic
this is, for this show. I'm saying we're the Union Square Community Improvement District, but to the press and to you know, everything else, we're Union Square not for sale.
Union Square not for sale,
that's
your website, right?
That's our group. That's our
Union
website.
Square not for sale.
Union Square not for sale. .org.
.org. There you go.
Easy to remember. Not pithy, not witty, but
NYCParkAdvocates.org is
yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
There you go. Okay.
Yeah.
Great. Okay.
So, just to be clear.
So, well, we could consider taking phone calls if that's what we want to do, or we could play more third world psychedelic music. I wonder if anybody has anything to say about any of this, which is 212-209-2950 is the number to call in if you have anything to say about what we're talking about tonight. And, you know, I always feel like a little bit of a, well, you know, a geek when I talk about issues of urban infrastructure. But there are really, you know, profound implications here for, you know, democracy and basically, you know, the whole notion of government and citizenship being eroded to, you know, that of, you know, corporate governance as opposed to government, public government versus corporate mm-hmm. governance, mm-hmm. And seeing our roles as, you know, consumers rather than as citizens.
Right.
Like when you call 311 these days, they say, thank you for calling New York City, as if, you know, we could just shop around and call some other city, you know.
Right. It could be, who knows, like that. Yeah, the service, the outsourced service. They could be, you know, answering the phone in Bangladesh, for all you know.
Exactly.
Like, you know, I mean, and they could be answering for any municipality anywhere in the world. Yeah, I mean, like, I think one of the things that, you know, well, when I heard about what was going on in Union Square, it, you know, it got my ire up for a number of reasons. One is that I know the history of Union Square Park, you know, and the north end of Union Square Park.
Absolutely.
And it's just like, you must be joking. You're going to turn that building into an upscale yuppie restaurant from hell. That's what
right,
you want to do.
Where Emma Goldman spoke,
right?
That, you know, back
right.
in the
and
day.
Paul Robeson sang, mm-hmm. and Cesar Chavez spoke, and you know, it's been a center
the
of 19, radical protest.
1927 Sacco and Vanzetti execution
right, right,
rally,
right, 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 right,
10,000
right, right.
people.
The Triangle Shirtwaist Factory. I mean, the first May Day, you know, first Labor Day. I mean, that.
Well, the first was Chicago.
Right. But the you know,
right.
The first, actually, the first, I think it was the first Labor Day, not the first May Day.
Mm-hmm.
I think it actually might have been the first May Day celebration because.
Probably the first one in New York.
Yeah.
Was there, certainly.
That's all that counts.
Yeah. That's all that counts for the center of the universe. So, knowing that, and like just like the sort of, you know, the trend towards privatization of everything
exactly.
as an organizational logic to society.
You got it.
Is like, you know, needs to be understood and needs to be confronted wherever it's going to happen. And it just struck me as like just kind of the ultimate insult to do it in a place where people have stood up for collective rights and for a kind of a version of citizenship that we need to aspire to and remember, and that's where they want to take that place and turn that into an upscale restaurant. It's just, you know, an ultimate insult, you know, I think to all of us. And, you know, we need to get out there. We're out there every Wednesday from 5 to 7.
Oh, yeah.
In the north end of Union Square.
Every Wednesday from 5
we're there
to 7.
Every, there's a small, at this point it's like summer vacation, but we are committed to being there every Wednesday from 5 to 7, where you can, you know, sign a petition that we have out there. We want to collect 5,000 signatures, take them over to Rosie Mendez's office, where, you know, you can sign up to our email announcement.
All right,
list.
Now she is the city council person
yeah.
from Lower Manhattan who initially was on board with your struggle to save public space in Union Square and kind of flipped on us, if I got that.
Indeed.
Right.
Yeah, she flipped on us. She went from being opposed to the plan to being for the plan. I mean, and Jeffrey was very intimately involved with, was around and in her presence during this whole time. I mean, there's really no clear explanation as to, you know, what exactly went on in her head. You know, there's conjecture, somebody like threatened her or what, you know, we don't really know.
Look, it's a part of the political process to, you know, co-opt
yeah.
politicians.
Yeah, she's an activist. I mean, she's actually been on the right side of a lot of issues.
Yes, really indeed.
I mean, she's not. It comes as a bit of a surprise to see someone,
Well, I mean, I hate to say it, but, you know, I mean, they sort of got to
Margarita
Lopez before her.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
and then she was kind of elected as someone who's going to move things back to the grassroots. And, you know, so, I mean, it's the nature of the beast, you know. I mean, I can't wait to see what Obama's going to do. I mean, I hope we get a chance to find out, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I hope Obama gets a chance to betray us. You know, I really do. So,
Yeah. So, she flipped on this. And so we're really trying to call her out and trying to get her to change your position back to, you know, where it should be, you know.
Well, we actually do have a couple of calls, but let me ask one thing of Mark Reed before we do. Rather, of Jeffrey Croft of NYC Park Advocates. When are they going to start charging money to get into Central Park? Is that going to happen in our lifetimes?
Actually, it's funny you say that. There's some period cartoons. There's a great book called The Park and the People, a book about Central Park, and there's some great cartoons about that, having entrance gates, turnstiles going into Central Park.
From when?
I want to say they're from the 30s.
Wow.
I have to go back.
And this was
you're actually hitting me with really good questions, I have to say. But I think they were from the 30s. Actually, do you know what?
And these were like political cartoons?
Yes,
political satire
cartoons, and now you just got me.
They weren't like New Yorker cartoons.
They could have been New Yorker cartoons, but actually, now I remember it was during the Moses era. Because, you know, Moses did a lot of interesting things. I mean, he has so much power that he could literally close down every playground in New York City if he didn't get a budget allocated. education. And that's the power. And we don't have that this day. And I'm not saying that's a good thing that one person has all that power, but it was effective, at least in the issues that I care about. No, in this one context. But, yeah, we don't have, a political will to enact, legislation and have the elected officials, really, take care of, proper funding. And that's what we keep hearing over and over again. But yeah, I mean, Central Park is, Central Park. And now we have a Bon Jovi concert coming out, which is interesting to me because, of course, during Bloomberg's administration, we, didn't want, that group, to protest in 2004 during the Republican convention.
Right.
But it's okay to have a large scale, rock concert. Yeah.
Okay, so have there been serious proposals about, $10 to get into Central Park?
No, nothing like that. I mean, they are public in that respect. I think, it is interesting. I think the Randall's Island deal is probably the closest, I might think of more during this broadcast, but I think the Randall's Island deal is probably the closest large scale, because that's 178 acres. That's pretty large. I mean, and Brooklyn Bridge Park actually has been in the news a lot as well. Again, these self-sustaining parks, which is to me a very dangerous precedent. They're putting housing in a so-called park, but what the community wants
and needs. Which park is this?
This is the brand new, now it's $350 million, which I said a year and a half ago is going to, it started out as a $150 million project, and I said,
Which park are we talking about?
This is a brand new park called Brooklyn Bridge Park.
Between
the bridges.
On the Brooklyn side.
Yeah, it hasn't been built yet. So
I thought that was state land.
It's city and state, and now the city just kicked in another $75 million. But what the plan that was approved, and they've been going through this. I mean, it's been torturous the last 20 years. The plan that was approved was a lot more recreation, public recreation. And now, actually, the same architect, the same landscape architect, that's doing Union Square Park, Michael von Valkenburg. It's a lot of landscaping, and what the public needs is recreation. But anyway, that project has jumped. Not using park employees from $150 to $350 million. And again, instead of having the city or the state pay for parks, which is what we used to do, now the model is to have it self-sustaining. So now they're putting in, luxury condos, which are, I believe I saw on the paper last month, this one adjacent to the park, it's called One Brooklyn Bridge Park, I believe. They even have an address for it. It was the most expensive co-op ever sold in Brooklyn Bridge.
Indeed.
Yeah, because again, now you have a park that's their backyard. So that's another controversial project. And again, in my opinion, if you sit down with the community, and yes, the community can be agitators, and yes, the community can be a pain in the butt. But, start out by listening to the community first. Community-based planning and community-based consultation does not exist. It is so amazing.
Well, I mean, on paper it does. I mean, there are community boards and blah, blah, blah.
Well, yeah, don't get me started on that. But, I mean, I'm talking about parks. I mean, parks, it does not exist.
And well, did Community Board 5 sign off on this Union Square
Rosie
thing?
Mendez did, yeah.
Well, Rosie Mendez did. She's not the community board.
Right. The community board actually, what they signed off on the plan, but which did not include the pavilion. And that's unfortunately what our parks commissioner has unfortunately misrepresented time and time again, and even on.
All right, hang on. They signed off on a plan which is not actually the plan.
Well, they signed off on the plan, but they did not. They did not sign off on the restaurant plan.
All right, so
they signed off on the North End reconstruction, mm-hmm. but it did not include the restaurant plan. So, like, for instance, the parks commissioner feels compelled to say on New York One that the community board overwhelmingly approved it. That's not accurate. So that's the kind of thing. I mean, like, the mayor doesn't call him up, or Patty Harris doesn't call him up.
All right, so they signed off on a more vague version of the plan.
They signed off on the plan, but the plan didn't include the restaurant.
All right, but now the plan does include the restaurant.
Yeah.
And then they have no official position on it.
They have no official. It's the most bizarre thing you've ever seen in life. What the city wants to do is issue an RFP, which is a request for proposals. We're saying we don't need it. It's the last thing we need is an RFP, because what we need is children's programming. We need community space. That's what the city should be doing. So
I thought that we're past the point of an RFP. If they've already got a, you know, a plan, and they've already got a, you know, they're going to turn the pavilion into a restaurant.
Well, there you go, thinking like a smart person again.
Well, I'm just trying to understand the situation.
Well, no, I'm not being facetious. I mean, that's the problem, is that, you know, and the city goes into court. It's the most hilarious thing, saying, oh, well, we don't know what's going to go in there. Meanwhile, you know, we have the building permits. They file for a building permit for a restaurant for 120 people. I have the 176-page plan, the schematics, the actual, you know, designs for it. Restaurant, kitchen, it's in there dozens of times.
All right, so you're saying there actually is a little bit of flim-flam going on.
A little bit, yeah. Okay, it's a little.
Okay, so, all right. Oh, we forgot to mention the litigation. Tell us about the litigation. NYC Parks Advocates brought the litigation?
No, it's a group that I've been working with for a while now called the Union Square Community Coalition. They've been around since 1980, and actually now I'm a board member. And I've been working with them, and they brought the litigation, and we're in court right now. There is an injunction against the building of a restaurant, so we do get calls about, well, how can we see construction going on? And the reason why is because they are going ahead with everything but the restaurant. So they'll build out the kitchen space, but the judge says you're not allowed to put any fixtures, kitchen fixtures in there. So that's the space. It's a 1,900 square foot space, which we would like to use that for recreation space.
Okay, and the city is appealing, I take it.
The city, the lovely city. Obviously, they're not happy with that, and, you know, they're going through the motions of, you know, appealing and all that stuff, yeah. So, yeah, in the next couple of weeks, we probably should get some action on that. And, you know, court cases take time, so everyone's, you know, always asking.
All right, so at the moment, at the moment, there's an injunction. So.
Yeah, there is an injunction, yeah, which is good. And, but, you know, unfortunately, they cut down trees in the playground. I mean, it's sad. I mean, again.
They've already cut down trees.
Yeah, they cut down these 80-year-old trees. Yeah. It's sad. It's just, you know.
All right. Now, are they ostensibly going to return that north section back over to the to the green market?
Yeah. The plan is, they're going to restore it, and they're going to put in some utilities and some water lines and make it a little bit more, you know, user-friendly for the green market.
Oh, okay. Well, so good.
They'll have less space.
Less space. And also, I'll note that traditionally the critical mass ride is met up there.
Right.
Right. So one wonders if they're going to be allowed back here.
Right.
All right. Should we take a couple of calls in the remaining 15 minutes? 212-209-2950. A minute ago, a bunch of people were calling. Now they're not anymore. So call back, people. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. I should also say for the record that in my moment of on-air brain scramble, the name which I got confused, of course, the Times Square development czar in the 1990s was Gretchen Dykstra.
Oh, right. Gretchen, sure.
Okay, so, why don't we take a couple of calls. WBAI, you're on the air.
Yes, hello.
Hello.
I was sad to hear they cut those trees down, but they did that in Washington Square Park, too. And I don't see how you're going to make the city non-elitist, because if you make restaurants, they are ecologically garbage because you have to employ people. You've privatized a public park by catering to the elite people or the tourists or the people such as in Brooklyn. They did a study, and today they said that of the 22% improvements in the buses of the city, guess which cities profited the most, which parts of the city? Manhattan, Staten Island, Brooklyn, and the Bronx. The Queens buses are the most crowded and most inefficiently run. Now, when you're talking about public things, you need to talk about where they're building and what they're building in Brooklyn. And believe me, Mayor Bloomberg has put his money in many things, so I wouldn't put him lower than Moses. I really think he's even bigger than Giuliani was. He is very important, and where his money goes, people listen because he puts them on the boards. So I admire that you have a court case coming up, but the fact that they destroy trees, I'm always concerned with that beautiful Union Square Park. And it's, as you all said before, such a wonderful space. I don't know how you fight the elite people, and if you can tell me that, because I don't think Robert Moses was the hero people think he is. I think that kind of, he was a corporate in a person.
When I don't think people think of Robert Moses as a hero today. I think
Bloomberg always praises him. Oh, yeah. He thinks of him as a role model.
There's been some revisionists.
They like him for that. Mm. People like that you have
right,
one
but it's,
guy
it's
doing
revisionism,
they,
though. I mean, he's been, you know, demonized for the past...
For the past 40 years.
Yeah. I don't think so, because a lot of people like him. Foreigners like him. Tourists like him. He treats them very well.
No. I don't mean Bloomberg. I mean Robert Moses.
But they actually have used those words. They are booklets. I get this... booklet from the Metropolitan Museum and from the New York Historical Society, and they've had meetings with Bloomberg where he touted in the beginning
right.
of the year.
But it's revisionism. It's like, Well, it's dangerous. I agree. It's dangerous.
And I was wondering what you could do about that. I don't know that we can do very much.
Well, how do you fight the elite? I mean, that's like a pretty old question. I mean, people have been fighting that fight for 1,000 years.
But don't you think right now they're going to win because they
No, I never do. No,
oh,
absolutely
well,
not.
Well, good for you. You
absolutely
give
not.
Hope.
Well,
I
yeah.
hope to you stay that way.
Actually, ma'am, I just wanted to just interrupt just for a second. I mean, Union Square Park is a perfect example. When we got involved again, there were they wanted to only give the community a 28% increase in playground space, and now it's almost triple. So again, it's pure tenacity, and we had great people on our side.
Oh, yeah,
and yes, we lost some trees, and you know, Washington Square was another ridiculous thing happening down there. But again, I encourage people: you can fight City Hall. Yes, you have to. You have to just maintain a sense of sanity because you know it's very hard. But if you believe in something, you know, get your friends together, and you know, it's very important because too many times we're hanging out on the sidelines and not doing things. You know, people always ask me how many kids I have. You know, why am I doing this? It's you know why? How can I not do this?
On the subject of fighting the elites, I have an announcement, by the way, which I forgot until just now. But just to remind people to come out this Friday, July 11th at 8 p.m. to 47 East 3rd Street. You guys know about the situation at 47 East 3rd Street, where the Economakis landlord family is trying to turn out the entire building.
Yes,
and to turn it into, you know, essentially their private mansion for a family of what? I think a family of four. You know, they want to take over an entire five-story, tenement for a family of four and turn it into their private mansion.
Yeah.
And if you go to their website, they're saying that they've made these offers to the tenants, which they've refused to accept. And I say good for the tenants for refusing to accept, because it's a divide and conquer ploy where they're trying to pit tenants off against one another. And, some of you can stay, but some of you are going to have to leave. And, the tenants should hang together and fight against this absolute atrocity. And if we want to loan some support to the tenants of 47 East 3rd Street, please come on out this Friday at 8 p.m. and bring cake and donuts, because that's going to be the theme. The theme is let them eat cake, which is the attitude of the Economakis family towards us mere commoners of New York City. Now, apparently what happened, this has been going back and forth in the courts, and apparently the state Supreme Court remanded it back to housing court. So around it goes. So now it's back in housing court where it began. And I guess probably sometime within the next few months, housing court is going to rule one way or another. And it's going to be a very, very bad precedent for the power of tenants generally in New York City if the Economakises get away with this atrocity. And it's going to be a bad precedent certainly for the the general cultural atmosphere in my neighborhood, the East Village, if they get away with this. So once again, come on out with cake and donuts to 47 East 3rd, which is near the corner of 2nd Avenue, this Friday at 8 p.m. And let's take a more phone calls. WBAI, you're on the air. Hello.
Yes, hello.
Hello.
Yes, I just want you to know I'm hated on WBAI. because I'm critical of the station and a lot of things.
What is this that we're talking about? What is this that we're talking about tonight, Monroe?
Let me explain. I want you to understand that you made me terribly sorry about the fake grass.
Well,
that it goes up to 160 degrees, that it's not healthy to
160 degrees.
It.
Yes, huh? we've been through all this. 160 degrees.
I want
you
to understand that you made my life miserable.
Well, I'm terribly sorry, Monroe, but that's what we're here for, you know? WBAI, you're on the air. Hello?
Hey.
Hey. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you all?
I'm good.
Excellent.
Good.
How are you? Thanks for calling.
I must say, power to the people as far as to have a tree and to maintain normal grass, real grass in a concrete situation. I live in New Jersey, and I have trees all around me, but I can't stand a whole bunch of buildings, and that's what goes on into New York.
Yep.
And it's really a very good conversation and show because it lets all of us know in the tri-state area what's up with the parks and public spaces.
Thank you.
Cool. Thanks for your call.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, it's more than just about parks. This really has a lot to say about the way, the direction that society and the nature of power in this world is going generally. We've got five more minutes and two more calls. 212-209-2950. Shall we see who's out there? WBAI, you're on the air.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, I'm the organizer of the Economicus rally, and I wanted to let you guys know that we're going to have a march from that rally. It's going to hit some of the major real estate obnoxious developments in the neighborhood, but we are planning to end up in Union Square Park.
Ah.
And we would like you possibly to come at the beginning and let us know what you've been telling Bill on the radio tonight, and we will take a whole bunch of Rosie Mendez constituents on a tour of the neighborhood ending in Union Square Park.
What time? Where?
It's the thing that Bill just announced.
Yeah, I know.
47 East 3rd Street, Friday the 11th, 8 p.m.
Near the corner of 2nd Avenue.
Right, near the corner of 2nd Avenue. And we think there's going to be quite a lot of people there who will be you know, both of us from the Tompkins Square Park and the Union Square can unite around a lot of different issues.
Yep,
so come out and speak to us about what you've been telling Bill tonight.
That sounds great. Thank you.
All right, sure.
All right, once again, that's going to be this Friday, 8 p.m. at 3rd Street and 2nd Avenue. This Friday, July 11th, 8 p.m. Bring cake and donuts. 212-209-2950. If anybody out there has anything else to say, or maybe we should just go out with more music if nobody else out there has anything more to say. So, yeah, maybe we'll just go out with more music. First of all, any closing words from...
Yeah, check us out at unionsquarenotforsale.org or come by the park on Wednesdays from 5 to 7 and, you know, keep
North end of Union Square Park.
The north end of Union Square Park, 5 to 7 on Wednesdays. And, you know, we'll keep you posted on, you know, the next creative direct action that we do, which we've been having fun. We've had a couple of the larger actions and they've been a lot of fun. And we try to keep them, like, quick and user-friendly, I guess, would be the term of art these days. So.
User-friendly.
I know. I hate
that. What does that mean in this context?
I mean, they're not too long. You know, they don't, like, tire you out with a bunch of people standing up and speechifying for hours on end, you know, that kind of crap.
And they have great graphics. You guys have great graphics.
You have good graphics. You have good aesthetics, songs, chants.
And good-looking people, too.
Pretty people.
Yeah,
true.
You guys have, yeah.
We're rocking the house. It's fun. So come from Wednesdays from 5 to 7.
Well, you know, what about us ugly people? We're entitled
to
dignity in this society.
You're a good-looking guy, Bill. What are you talking about?
I didn't make it an age thing. I just said good-looking people. I do not. I think, you know.
Oh, so you're saying I look old?
No. That's what you said. I, you know. I would just like to end with, you know, thank you very much for having us on the show. Yeah. You did an awesome job, and you're very well prepared, which I love, love, love. And also, you know, just again, for the general public, you know, tell your elected officials that parks and open spaces are important, and they need to be funded. And, you know, it's just completely...
Oh, what an old-fashioned, backward-looking idea, reactionary.
I know, crazy stuff, huh? Crazy. But thank you for it.
Yeah, thank you guys. You've been great. Very, very well informed, very on top of things. Mark Reed of Union Square Community Improvement District or
Union Square Not For Sale.org.
And Jeffrey Croft of NYC Park Park Advocates.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, pretty good.
Yeah. Okay. And this has been the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade here on listener-supported non-commercial WBAI. Oh, by the way, I should mention, by the way, that this is listener-supported and non-commercial WBAI. We're in really bad financial shape, folks. We really are. And I have just been led to understand that there is going to be an emergency summer fundraiser happening imminently. I'm not sure if it begins next week or the week after, but soon we're going to need people to come in and answer the phone. So if you love the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade, or if you hate the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade and you want to come in and give me grief, please call the station during working hours and sign up to volunteer to answer phones during the mini marathon, which is coming up, because the station is really in a bad financial crisis. We really need your help if we're going to survive, and if there's going to continue to be an outlet for this kind of conversation, which I would argue is extremely vital to the maintaining any kind of a salubrious social process in this city in this day and age. So it's coming up, folks. Just be aware to, support us either with your time or your money or both, because, we wouldn't be doing it if we didn't really, really need it. So with that, do stay tuned. We'll be talking more about issues of New York City and the creeping privatization of all known reality this summer. It's kind of a theme this summer, I would say, on this radio show. So there'll get more coming at you. So do stay tuned to listener-supported, non-commercial WBAI 99.5 FM. Weaponry with Tom Whisker is coming up next. And let's see, should we go out with... Yes, let's go out.
Please remember that this program is supported by the listener members of WBAI New York. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a member of WBAI or renewing if you've already joined. Basic membership is $25, but we accept any amount. Help us keep free speech alive.